This is the Counter Ruck Rugby Podcast, brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns, and I'm joined here on this Monday morning by Gordon Darcy. It's a strange one, isn't it? I think a lot of, you know, this podcast started as a men's Six Nations podcast, and a lot of people kind of tune in and out of rugby based on the Six Nations, and it kind of feels like last week after the men's, I had at the end of school vibes, but the weekend after, it's been the busiest weekend of Irish rugby for months. I mean, there were five games involving Irish teams. Ireland women lost to France in their Six Nations opener, and obviously the four provinces wins for Leinster and Munster in their return to URC action. Richie Murphy lost in his first Ulster game in charge down at South Africa against the Sharks, and Connacht lost at home to the Lions. So plenty going on.
Yeah.
What caught your eye?
Well, Robbie Henshaw getting married, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So true. Obviously my invite got lost in the post, but he took my position back in 2015. It's nothing like...
Is that a take your position, take your contract type of situation? Or
When I say take my position, like not in that sense. I remember doing the November Internationals, and I got injured coming in, and it's like training your replacement and you seeing it before anybody else. And he started training with Jared, and like they clicked instantly. And I was sitting on the sideline with a bag of ice in my ass going, oh, this isn't good. This is not good.
So when was that? What about 2014?
2014, yeah, November. So they played together, and then I played, I think, with Luke Marshall in the Australia game. And yeah,
obviously, like,
yep. And then it was the full stop wasn't long becoming. So you'd think he would have invited me then to his wedding, like at
just
least.
To say sorry.
Yeah, yeah. You know.
I saw some clips on social media, actually. It looked like he's very, very musical with the Henshaws. So it looked like the day two session was a fun one, the music and all that going on.
Not a bad couple of weeks' work.
Yeah.
Coming back into 13, more familiar position, playing some of the best rugby he's gotten, getting married and getting to enjoy with a few Kayleys.
What happened then? So he was at Connacht then when he kind of came into the Ireland setup. I think 2016 was when he moved to Leinster. How did that work with your...
I was gone.
You were gone by then?
Oh, yeah.
I was
ceremoniously brought behind the back of the shed and given two in the back of the head.
Right. No ice back this time, just...
No, it was clean. Yeah, two bullets, and I didn't get selected for the World Cup. It was like, yeah, best of luck.
Well, congratulations to the Henshaws. But what caught your eye on the pitch this weekend? Plenty to talk about. We were kind of looking at various different clips of what happened and the tries of the weekend. And as is often the case at the kind of domestic level, you kind of see a little bit more adventurous play, a little bit more attacking play maybe than the international scene. But what caught your eye?
I think that's definitely, isn't it? It was a bit more offloading, a bit more pushing defences. You can see that high read with a lot of the defenders. But offloads, and I think the scorelines, there wasn't really any massive surprises, were there?
The Connacht game?
The first thing I said to you when I came in, I was like, oh. The Lions not exactly setting the world alight. And then last season, they've obviously really found their feet. They're probably the most settled team in South Africa with not as many Springboks as some of the other teams. So they definitely look a little bit settled. But that's probably the one outlier. Some of the tries were pretty good. You had Andrew Smith with his almost... meandering try,
well,
and then
he did what growing up he did what every single rugby coach I ever had screamed at their wingers for doing, which is just running the length of the pitch sideways in a bid to try and find a gap. He ends up finding one, probably a little bit of crossing involved, but slipped under the radar. He ends up finding one and then just lost control of the ball over the line. So he did what he shouldn't have done, and then he ended up butchering the try a little bit.
Yeah. So I think, there was definitely some good tries. I think offloading was definitely a theme in the over the weekend. I thought Horn's try for the Lions was one of the picks of the bunch. It was just like back rows offloading and back rows finishing. But I think the offload from Pretorius in the lead up to it down the short side, and just, you know, everything you want to see, handing off one player, being tackled by another player, and the, you know, the big mitt comes around and pops it up, and then it's just a simple 2v1. But they just looked so dangerous. How impactful pace is on the pitch, and that's what made, for me anyway, the Lions, all their back three, all their outside backs, they all had just looked like they had that extra yard of pace on their opposite numbers.
It was topical to see that, because I think when John O'Sullivan was last in on the pod, you know, the hill he'll die on is the lack of speed in back three players in Irish rugby. It's his favourite topic of conversation these days. But I do agree with them, and actually wrote something for Saturday's paper kind of exploring that and kind of looking at, well, who is there? You know, Ireland don't prioritise speed
at the national level. Andy Farrell wants his messy ball-playing wingers rather than light and quick. Like James Lowe is a, you know, really good ball player, big-bodied, runs through people, massive left boot, but he's not rapid. Mac Hansen's not rapid.
Is that fair? But he said he doesn't want players with top-end speed. I'd say he would give his left little toe for
maybe.
He wants all of that, but it's not like there is a, in case of emergency, speedster we have there. They are comparatively as fast as other players in the position. They're just better rugby players.
What I ended up writing was kind of like, you know, in an ideal world, you're right. You want both. You want the ball players because Ireland gets the width more than anyone. But the reason why they do it is because they've got two wingers who come in and link up and then they've got a forward sitting in the wide channel or whatever it is. But you want the guys who can do that. And then when they're in the wide channels, they've got the evasion, the speed, the footwork. I mean, there's not that many wingers who have both. Chesney Colby is probably the only one. And only because he used to play out half. I think back when he was at Toulouse.
Will Jordan?
Maybe Will Jordan. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're talking, like, well, I suppose we're talking
the top of the top of the
world. Yeah, but
we
have to aspire to that. Well, sorry, not aspire to that. Well, like, we are 1-2 in the world. So depending on which way the wind blows. So you're kind of going, that is what you want. That's what, you know, young wingers looking at should be aspiring to, is that, you know, if I was, you know, 15, 16, I was there going, okay, if you're quick and you're, what sets you apart? Having that ball playing ability.
But I guess the point is, and this is to link back to the Lions game, like South Africa, and we mentioned Colby, they just seem to have these guys growing on trees. There was that intercept try that the right winger scored. Just, you know, popped up out of nowhere, standing start. He's doing the classic South African thing of he's just standing in the passing channel. He actually kind of made a mess of it because he was standing there. Like, you know, he wasn't like he was a onrushing threat that came into the line late. He was standing in the passing channel for a good 5 seconds and the ball just ended up in his hands.
Being passed into it. And you know, as soon as he's turned,
he's gone.
There's nobody catching him. So you picked out Sean O'Brien's tries.
For Munster. Yeah. Same thing.
You probably didn't have the same confidence that he was going to go 70 yards as you would have done for the either of the wingers for the Lions.
No, fair play. I mean, look, Sean O'Brien scored two intercept tries for Munster on Friday night against the Ospreys. The first one in particular, where he outruns Giles, the Ospreys winger, who has got a bit of a reputation as a pacey winger. Fair play to him. That was a clean pair of heels. And,
well, it was the big fend.
Big fend as well.
Yeah.
But the second try was my favourite try of the weekend, purely because...
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It had the chip and chase. He intercepts, he runs the length, probably from the 22, he chips ahead. He runs then, he does that arcing run out of play and back into play, which I don't know why they do it, but it always makes it look more difficult than it has to be, maybe. Doesn't get to the ball first. Whoever was there in the backfield to the Ospreys gets to it, kicks it into his face, and he still somehow manages to score. So that was my personal.
Yeah, you just need the Charlie Chaplin music playing that in the background. But it was a lovely bit of skill from O'Brien. Again, playing that high, you can see in the build-up to, it was almost identical build-up to both tries for Sean O'Brien and for the interception for the Lions. They are playing that high, not too high, but they're getting up just on the kind of passing line, the defensive line, and they're just basically standing there. But there's a loop play or a pivot play happening, you know, one pass infield. So I think it was JJ Hanrahan does the Sexton wraparound.
For Connacht.
Yep. And he does he then just passes it into the winger's hands. The same for the Ospreys. There's a pivot off the forwards, 10's coming around, and O'Brien's just staying big in the space and just effectively just picks it off.
I think we need to give Munster a lot of credit because I think a lot of the conversation around defensive systems this year has been Leinster, considering, you know, the individual they've hired this year, Jacques Nienaber, and their new blitz defence. But I mean, Munster have kind of been doing that for the last 2 years now, since Leamy took over there. I mean, I remember reading a piece a couple of months ago, and you know, one of the video analyst guys on Twitter who's very prominent did a piece where he got very granular and he looked at the amount of passes allowed per tackle. And obviously, if you're not allowing a lot of passes per tackle, you're rushing up and flying up and hit lads. And Munster were towards the top of the tree on that regard. So I think, you know, we need to talk about them a little bit and talk about how they have got a very aggressive defensive system and it got them two tries on the weekend.
I think particularly he is quite good as well, O'Brien. I think his experience as a centre, remember, he is a centre playing on the wing.
Which, again, Irish rugby loves doing that. Yeah. We love just getting these lads who played centre, played wing, whatever it was. Gary Ringrose started his career as a winger.
We don't play.
You started your career as a winger, didn't you, when you first played for Leinster?
Yep. Well, I started as a fullback and then... When you're playing at 13, that's, you know, you have to be good at that, staying big in the space and knowing when to come up and back. And he's just happening one channel wider. And he's, you know, he looks very comfortable in that. For me, the wing was always, it used to be a way of just getting young guys into the team. And I know I was talking to Jamie Osborne about him, and maybe that might be a route for him in the coming months. But just wingers getting him into it. But like the lack of out and out wingers coming through is, you don't want to say the word concern or everything like that, but you're kind of going, with all the development that we have going into it, you know, you need players with right wing for Leinster. It was Rob Russell. He has top end pace, and you can see that.
Does he?
Yeah, I think he's
talking about the try he scored on the weekend. Yeah, first phase try,
it was good. It was good. Good pace getting into it, but then isn't the complete package because doesn't have that playmaking ability of, say, James Lowe, Mac Hansen, which is so important because that element of creativity was lacking in Ireland's last two games. The major playmakers or guys who were going to do something different were Gibson Park, James Lowe, Mac Hansen. They've always been those guys. They do something a little bit different, a little bit creative. And I don't think they made up that deficit with Mac Hansen not being there. And it eventually caught up with them when they looked a little bit tired.
All three guys who coincidentally were not developed in the Irish system. So there's a bit of a pattern here. I'm by no means writing a Telegraph column that says we can't have foreigners playing for your country. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's intriguing that those guys who do give Ireland's attack that extra edge.
But they can do it. But if you look at Caelan Doris, is arguably one of our most creative players when the Irish pack is on the front foot and when we're in the ascendancy. The same you would have said with Kieran Reid. Genuine ball players with a decent rugby IQ. Caelan Doris is absolutely in that. So it can be done. It isn't a real focus at the underage.
Speaking of fast wingers, arguably the try of the game in the Ireland women's defeat to France was the one scored by Ménager, the French winger. Lovely little inside ball from the scrum half. Word on inside, there's a gap, bang, off she goes and sprints 40 yards. Brilliant, brilliant score. Probably actually one of the only tries that France kind of scored that maybe wasn't, they got a good few more tries as well. They took on Ireland up front and beat them up front, but they also had that kind of, look, you know, I hate saying it, it's such a cliche, but there's that French flair. There's that kind of attacking edge that Ireland were lacking.
French scrum halves.
Yeah.
She's just, you could just see the moment the opportunity, she clicked into gear as soon as the maul got going, and the defender, the pillar defender just to the side of the ruck was a tiny bit slow readjusting. She's gone through it straight. And you're saying that same thing, bit of spacing wrong at the ruck, sees it, and like was fairly well, wasn't well telegraphed, but you could see it unfolding, and the Irish defence never...
She just drew, Aoife Wafer was the Irish pillar, and she just, you know...
Balls are out.
There's scrum half, hit scrum half. Oh wait, hang on, ball's gone, wingers under the posts. Yeah, a lot of positivity from that game. I think a lot of people from the Irish camp as well as outside, I think a lot of the write-ups this morning, Gerry Thornley writing about it in the Irish Times, kind of, you know, saying a lot of positives, considering I think they shipped 50 points to France last year, France who were down to 14. For most of the game down in Cork. So look, to limit the damage and also score 17 points of your own was probably, it does represent progress. And I think, expectations were low heading into this game. Set piece wise, Ireland struggled a good bit. Line up maul, scrum, understandable. That's always been a French area of dominance over Ireland. But Ireland didn't create a lot attacking wise. But I think, you know, defensively, they can be pretty happy with performance considering where things have been in the past.
Yeah, and I think you look for areas to improve or where you have improved, and you will take an awful lot from that, and you're not going to turn a ship around instantly. Still lacking a bit of competition for places. That is the women's game in a bit of a nutshell. They need to be able to develop players coming through, but performances like that, you know, and you want to keep it as positive as possible. And I wasn't not sure who said it, but I just remember catching it on the radio. And they're talking about the crowd being really important at that game. And they'd love to see that at the RDS for their first home match. And that would make a massive difference to them playing in front of that crowd, because it looks like there's more about them this year, you know, better organized, and getting on the road in France, like, let's not pretend
to
that it's not
there at this stage.
Not a massive challenge against a fully professional team,
one that's been professional for a hell of a lot longer.
Yeah, they'd be very happy with aspects of it, but now they will want to back it up with another performance and try and see growth in the other side, which is around that attacking ability.
Yeah, huge game. It's Italy game. I think that's the one that everyone's kind of earmarked ever since the calendar came out at the RDS on Sunday. Interesting to see if Ireland can create a little bit more in that game. Limited game plan, understandably. When there's such a gulf between the sides, you often see the weaker side resort to maybe a kicking game and, an acknowledgement they're not going to create as much. Nicole Fowley at 10 kind of executed that game plan. They did take her off at halftime. They brought on Dan O'Brien, who's probably a bit more of a slightly more natural attacker. I don't know. We need to see a good bit more of her at international level.
I was finding that balance between actually getting results and then playing. Because you don't want to be, just dying on your sword and say, oh, well, this is the type of game we want to play. Like, you look and say, what did Wales ultimately achieve during the Six Nations? Fits and starts of flashes of rugby without ultimately getting a result, which for the women's team now, that's a very narrow tightrope to walk, because you lose 5 games on the trot. And you say, oh, well, we played well for 20, but that message becomes hard to fall in. So I think this is a huge game for them. As we said, there's a lot of positivity coming off the back of that. And I don't think it's hollow. I think the substance to it, there was enough there to show the defense is working. They did score 2 tries, one of them coming from pressure in defense as well. So they will take that confidence into it. So, I do wish them all the very best.
Yeah, Nia Jones deserves a special mention. I mean, perhaps unsurprisingly, given Ireland did finish bottom of the table last year. And if you are struggling, you do tend to do a lot of defending. But last year, she was the competition's top tackler with 90. And she had 23 tackles on the weekend. Again, you have to take the context of they're the weaker side. You're going to be doing a lot more defending. But that's a ridiculously high workload. 23 tackles and 28 rucks hit. Do you ever hit that many rucks in a game? 28?
Yeah,
that's a lot of rucks to hit.
I spent an awful lot of my career. I think if you went by the ruck before a try, I'd say I was fairly close to the leader table. But those games, you just you feel it so much. Like when you get into high double figure tackles, you're like,
it's incredible fitness levels, though. Especially she's a hooker and she's playing 70 plus minutes. Like that's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah, it just shows that it's like that. Paul O'Connellism, isn't it? Zero talent moments. It doesn't take skill to get up off the ground, get back into a defensive line and work hard in defence. And that's exactly what we're talking about when you're sitting in there and saying, okay, well, can we get other people, can we get the 22 other players deliver that level? And the positive ripple effect that has within a squad is massive.
Coming up, we'll review a very busy weekend of action after the start of the Women's Six Nations and the return of the URC. And we'll look at how some of the players on the fringes of the Ireland squad can use this window when the Six Nations internationals are away to force their way into the reckoning for the summer tour to South Africa. Welcome back to the Counter Rock Rugby Podcast from the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns. I'm still here with Gordon Darcy. Darce, we were talking about this before we started recording here. There's 2 weekends now, halfway through it, where the internationals on the men's side won't be back. Probably, a few of them might filter in, but for the most part, they'll come in for the European Games on first weekend of April. Then you're into, if the provinces win, they're into knockout European games, and then you're into more crunch URC action, like the top 8 of the URC, there's a handful of points separating them, Champions Cup spots, home quarterfinals, all of that is up for grabs. So we're probably going to see a little bit less rotation of the kind of squad players in and out. So this 2-week window for a lot of these guys is huge. And equally for a lot of guys who, if Andy Farrell is thinking about taking 2 or 3 guys to South Africa, who he can have a look at. If he takes a wider squad, he took quite a big squad down to New Zealand a couple of years ago and had a look at a lot of people. If he's looking at doing that, these 2 weeks are crucial for quite a lot of players.
Yeah, they are. And it's I wouldn't say it's the unintended consequence, but it is the natural consequence of the not running games during the Six Nations. So the URC wanted more marquee players playing more often, which is brilliant if you're a fan, but it's not great if you're third choice whatever position in any squad, are you kind of going, your opportunity to play games may have been, you know, 10 games two seasons ago, is now down to, you might be lucky to be involved in five match day squads. Leinster are arguably the anomaly where they tend to use more, but you know, you'll see that happening across. So where the opportunity for players to break in will have another natural consequence onto, say, the Irish team. So I would say, you know, the development tour worked really well. I'd be surprised if something like that isn't needed, because, you know, there's a whole group of players, and put them in an age bracket and a positional, say, bracket where there might be an incumbent international ahead of them or something. So they're going to be limited on quality exposure to proper matches. They're relying on injuries to get into that. So I think the window for them to play, they're going to need to create a window for them. And so, you know, maybe another emerging tour would be quite useful in the season ahead. As for players, but they're sticking their hands up, it's the need more so than the players, I think, at this stage.
Well, I mean, you look at what Ireland need.
Back three.
It depending on, obviously, Hanson and O'Brien's fitness, but also, like, they need, like we talk about, they need those speedsters, which they might not.
They need more options.
Might just not have them.
You know, Andy Farrell name checked Jordan Armour as, well, like, you know, down to my fifth choice fullback.
Yeah.
Was he legitimately his fifth choice fullback, or was he the guy that was in the training squad?
He probably was legitimately. I mean, if he hadn't got injured, maybe Mikey Haley might have been called in at some point once all those injuries. But of course, a lot of those injuries, like the second Keenan injury happened, you know, they made that decision on the morning of the game in the warm-up to pull him out. So you're not going to, that's when you're, whoever's in the training, you're right, whoever's in the training squad is there. But that's an interesting one. John O'Sullivan's written about Mikey Haley in today's Irish Times, kind of saying he's kind of coming back into the picture and should be there if Farrell's looking at a fullback. So that's an interesting name. Jamie Osborne's played a lot of fullback in his career. I think, I remember speaking to Leo Cullen after a match once, he's pretty settled that he will be a centre going forward, but he's a versatile option.
So you got the wings. I'll come back to Jamie Osborne in it. So you're looking back three for me. That is definitely an opportunity. Number nine, definitely.
Loosehead depth.
Yeah, loosehead depth.
We don't know what's happening. I don't think Keane Healy's contract length, I don't think, was publicly announced when he signed a new one. So I have no idea whether he's going to South Africa or if he's playing next season.
Yeah, but and with the best will in the world, the amount of years Keane will play will be on one hand. And probably, you know, and that's like, listen, you know, the guy can't go on forever. So you need to start looking at what the cover is, what the place in behind there. And then you have just players like Tom O'Hearn and things like that who are, performances are of a standard. They need to be in a conversation. But again, someone like Tom O'Hearn, you're going into the fight with Ryan Baird and a couple of other players in that area. But we did feel a little bit light in second row with one injury to James Ryan. But Jamie Osborne is obviously, I think, the guy who kind of is leading at the front. And while he might be settled as a 12-13 centre, looks like he's pretty comfortable in both of them. I think there's a lovely opportunity for him to serve an apprenticeship in the back three. A little bit like you look at, say, Tanu Manga when he played 20 tests for the All Blacks on the wing. Sterling Mortlock, another good example before he moves into 13. And that's a function of there's quality in that position, but also you're quite young and you get experience. You look at, like, Joe McCarthy, such an impressive foray into international rugby. You know, he even looked a little bit jaded towards the end of the Six Nations. So I think for Osborne to come in, I think coming in the back three could offer him a brilliant opportunity in Test rugby to find his feet.
It's an interesting one because he has played one or two matches in the wing for Leinster this year. And he also actually he very naturally pops up in those wide channels, even when he's playing at centre. He's got a really high dominant carry rate this year. And I think some of that at least is down to the fact that he does pop up in those wide channels and he is 6'4" and big and fast and he's running at wingers. And he should do quite well. But he's not that fast profile that we're talking about what they need. He'd be more of a James Lowe mold, big left boot, big bodied ball carrier type player.
Yeah, but we're totally saying if we were going to sit down here and took a piece of paper out and we were saying, okay, let's design the winger we want in Irish rugby. We want the Will Jordan or Chesney Kobe. We want the guy who's really, really fast, who's a brilliant playmaker, great defender, who has all of these things. But we don't have them at the moment. You pick good players in the position. So James Lowe, prime example, does he have the top end speed of a lot of wingers? Probably not. Mac Hansen, again, but they're so creative. So to me, Jamie Osborne absolutely fills that mode. And yeah, if he gets a bit of ball and a bit of space, he's going to do a bit of damage as well.
Be interesting to see what happens there, because again, kind of when Osborne got a man of the match award in the URC, so Leo Cullen was talking about him and he said, yeah, look, like you forget that, you know, if you watch the Netflix documentary from last year, like Jamie Osborne's there. He's in the training camp in Portugal. Like he was man of the match in a European game January 23 and got into the Ireland squad. So they have picked him. But then when all four centres were fit, the Ringrose, Henshaw, Bundy, McCluskey, he's the odd man out. So if you're Farrell and you want to look at someone like that, do you say, I give Bundy Aki the summer off?
No.
Or do you say you just take a massive squad and you take everyone?
Jeez, I don't think it'll be either. But if you look at, say, who was... So Jimmy O'Brien was up and fit at that stage. So he was ahead of Jamie Osborne in that kind of utility space on the bench. So the opportunity to get somebody in there. But I think that dynamic is changing now. I think Jamie Osborne is at a level where you're kind of going, actually can't leave him out of match days 23s. And I'm sure that the first challenge would be to do that at Leinster and then make sure he's in the match day 23. So, and that he's getting picked in there. And then it'll be a case of... I think he's one of those talents that you're just going to find room for him on the field. But Bundy, you know, but this is always the thing. And this is, can we ever afford to give players time off? Like, I don't think we necessarily can.
But you look what South Africa have done. They had they called it something strange. They called it like a realignment camp or something. 2 days, they all met up in Cape Town. They got all the new coaches in. Jerry Flannery was down there, obviously their new defence coach. And if you look at the squad Erasmus picked, like it's a massive squad, but there's like 20 guys in that squad that were not in that World Cup group. We talked about this whenever we had Jack Nienaber at that live event, and you kind of asked him, you said, look, you guys are happy to use the years in between World Cups to be much more development focused, whereas Ireland need to get their bonus money from winning the Six Nations as much as possible or finishing high up the ladder as the Six Nations. Like, it's a very different attitude. And you look at, now, that's not the squad South Africa picked for the Ireland tour. They might kind of bring all the big guns back for the Ireland tour, but it's a different attitude and it's a different way of doing it. And it'll be interesting to see, does Farrell stick to what Ireland do, which is be much more tried and trusted, or does he take five uncapped players?
Damien Vilmsa. Yeah. He came on the tour before the World Cup, played three tests at out half to see if was he able to manage a test match. And anyway, categorically,
no,
he cannot. They lost the three matches. I don't think we will ever, ever be in a position where we can do that type of experimenting. They had a legitimate reason for looking at him and saying, okay, this is the area of weakness we have, and he wasn't the fit for it. And then they went back to Manny Libbok, and then what's his name when he recovered from the
Pollard,
yeah, was the thing. So they were looking at that, going, we're giving him three tests and we'll see what comes up from it. I would be very surprised if we adopt that approach going forward. We can't rest anybody. Like, we're still picking Cian Healy, independent of his age.
Because you can lock down a scrum and we don't have many loose heads who can do that.
Yeah. Does the Irish team function without Bundy doing what he's doing at the moment? That's a big...
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no. Like, he's so important to... Like, even when the line-out was misfunctioning and even though we were winning ball, we weren't winning the ball we wanted, Bundy's still getting you over the gain line. Henshaw's still getting you over the gain line. Like, we were keeping things together. And we're going down to South Africa and... I think it goes back to this thing always ringing my ear about Steve Hansen talking about Ireland, you know, number one team in the world. How do they wear that? We have to front up. We've gone down as number one, number two in the world. So we've got to go down and, like, we have to front up there.
So we mentioned a few names there. Osborne is one they could look at. Tom O'Hearn and Ryan Baird could be in a shootout for the sixth jersey if O'Mahony is retiring, which I think a lot of people have retired him already without necessarily hearing anything.
Yeah.
So we'll await that news if and when it comes through. But Tom O'Hearn's another name. Anyone else? I think those are the two big ones. A lot of people are going to say, bring Antoine Frisch so the French can't steal him, because,
yeah,
you know, it's a genuine question. Who's actually the best?
Well, it'd be interesting to see what they, if both options are put on the table, who are they going to go
with?
Who does he pick? Yeah.
Exactly.
Is he going to go? Because, you know, as Galthier was said, like, he's French. He's an Irish grandmother, but he is French.
He was born in France. Yeah. There was interesting. Jerry Thorney interviewed him a couple of months ago, and there's a nice line in it where he's sitting in the coffee room in Munster or the break room, whatever it is, and Simon Zemo comes in and the two of them just start conversing in perfect French, because obviously Zemo has got his French background as well. So yes, he's definitely...
But if the areas, I think it goes back to the point we made earlier, what are the areas in need?
Yeah.
And you're kind of going, Loosehead, who is going to there? Like, there was a, that clip, that a clip that went around Ox
Nietzsche,
and he's pretty much, what do they call it, given Tom O'Toole his wings.
Worth checking out that clip, actually. Poor old Tom O'Toole is gone airborne, as they say. But that was Tom O'Toole scrummaging at Tighthead,
yeah,
which is obviously a harder scrummaging position. And Tom O'Toole during the week, we kind of talked about it last week. It's been something that's in the ether that he might move across. He actually said, he was obviously asked about it at a press conference last week. He said, yes, I have been training at Loosehead. It's something that we're discussing. He kind of said it in a way that's like, oh, I like having both options at my, you know, so I can be flexible where, you know, at some point you're going to have to say one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're probably looking at things like Ollie Yeager and Finlay Beelam as well. Could that be an opportunity for Tadhg Furlong to take a break, where you're kind of going, okay, well, you know, he started to get a little bit of form back in the 30s now. Is a bit of time off the field for him worth investigating?
Well, I'm sure he'd say no, because, you know, I'm pretty sure his central contract runs out in 2025. He wants to play as much rugby as he can in the next 12 months to guarantee they give another one.
I think one of the hardest balances as a player is trying to figure out your just playing isn't what gets you, you know, keeps you back. You have to be at a top level. Like the Premiership, like you look at, say, Saracens when they were at their best, and Leicester or Wasps before they went in, when they were at their best, their players, they had a cohort that just played consistently at 80%. And they just had lots and lots of really good players, but they played every week, every week, every week. But they never really, they were just never, there was a consistency to the performance without ever excelling. In Ireland, I think there is a real drive towards players peaking at various times. And it's actually, it arguably is harder. And I think Tadhg Furlong is at a ping now where he has gotten over a bit of injuries and finished the Six Nations really, really strongly. He's going to have to peak again now. Leinster will be looking at him going in. But I think his long term, the idea of a proper 12-week preseason at this age would be phenomenal. It's hard as a player, because sometimes you go, when you're told, like I didn't tour under Joe one of the year, and he's just saying, like, listen, I just want you to just go train. We're just going to look at somebody else, no value to you at this age thing. It's like, you've still got, you know, 2 years to go. And you're like, going, okay. You understand it in principle, but then actually having to watch somebody else play, you're like, oh, that's a thing.
Like you watching Robbie back in the day with the ice on the leg. Yeah.
So there might be, I think there might be a little bit of that in the summer, but I think for someone like him there isn't a ready-made successor, and you're kind of going, okay, well, his value over the next 3 years, a bit of rest now while he is on top of his game and not injured, I think will be really valuable.
Right then, we will leave it there for today. My thanks to Gordon, as always, and to our producer, John Casey. This is the Counter Ruck podcast in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns. Please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The Counter Ruck will be back next week.